hours.
Good evening, everybody. Tonight we are going to have a little bit of a meeting on a couple different bills. So it's Wednesday, February 8th, and it is 5:35. I apologize for starting late. And this is the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. And tonight we will be exclusively working on transformation. It is my intent tonight to open a public hearing on both the House Bill 4153 and the Senate Bill 1580. I want everybody to realize that is the same bill. It is just two separate vehicles depending on what occurs as we need to move these bills through the process. So don't get freaked out that there's two different bills. The dialogue and the discussion tonight and the amendments, when they are ready, will be exclusively to the Senate bill, and that will be the bill we work, but we are going to open a public hearing on both. I have a few people signed up to talk, and if your comments refer to a specific piece of the legislation or an amendment, it may be premature. If your comments are more general and wanting to make sure that your needs and desires get expressed, it would be appropriate to have that tonight. If not, once the amendment comes out, having an opportunity to, the co-chairs are going to take a quick recess, look at the amendment, and then have somebody from the governor's staff go through the amendments with the entire committee and those people that are in attendance. This may take a little while in that the amendment's not quite ready. LC is very quickly working through the last few things that were agreed upon this afternoon and trying to get the amendment ready for everybody. So I will go ahead and open, before I open the public hearing, does any other committee members have any opening statements they'd like to add? Wow.
You covered it well.
I always throw an extra opening statement in on you. I feel kind of bad now. So, okay, I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 4153 and on Senate Bill 1580. And with that, I have a few people signed up. Rick Bennett. We'll just do these one at a time in case it is that you don't like each other.
I thought you were going to bring a panel of like-minded people. I was very curious as to who you might pair me with.
Obviously, he couldn't find any.
Obviously decided to just one at a time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations, AARP Oregon. I appreciate the opportunity to speak briefly to you. I couldn't be here last night, so it's great to just be and I will offer just some general comments because otherwise I really don't know what I'm speaking to yet. Since a year ago, January, with many of you, I have participated in teams and work groups. I've been in large group discussions and small group discussions, open discussions, closed discussions, one-on-one conversations about transformation. Quite frankly, the governor's quest to transform the healthcare system here in Oregon has aged me greatly, as I suspect maybe it has aged you a little bit as well. But I think the effort is important improving the health and the health care of our citizens, and hopefully also finding a more efficient system for the delivery of that care. And I believe the process has been a good one. Let me just say that AARP certainly supports the proposal that the Health Policy Board has approved for the implementation of CCOs. We support now both bills, since they're both the same, and certainly looking forward to the amendment that might come forth later this evening. Related to the Dash 5s, let me just say, and it was mentioned last night by Mr. Riggs, related to, I think, Section 16, subsection D, where we're speaking about the coordination of the physical health and mental health and dental services and long-term care services. We believe the intent was to speak primarily to the Medicare services that are a part of that integration. And I think Mr. Riggs mentioned that perhaps just specifying, clarifying that by saying covered services or something would take care of that. The other comment I would just make is related to, I think, Section 15, that at least in the Dash 5, spoke to medical liability. And frankly, I've been somewhat disappointed in discussions when medical liability has come up, both last session and in this session as well, because all the attention seemed to be on just cost. And the reality is, and I've said this last session as well, medical liability is about the fact that people are injured by medical errors. And from my AARP's perspective, the current medical liability system is not working for those individuals. Frankly, many of the people who are injured don't see any compensation for their injuries. And those that do, oftentimes it's not adequate and it's not timely. And then also the current liability system, frankly, does not allow us to really learn from those errors and make the system safer. So when I look at the language here in Section 15, and it actually speaks to improving health patient safety, of more effectively compensating individuals who are injured at the result of medical error, I appreciate that that is also, at least in these Dash 5s, being considered. And I thank you for that as well. That Great. Concludes my statement. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for being here, and I'm quite confident you'll like at least one of the two things we did. So, thank you.
Thank you again.
Next, I'd like to call up, I'm sorry, was there any other questions?
Yes.
I'll go ahead and say this out loud. We're trying to drag this out a little bit, waiting for the amendment, so feel
Well,
free.
If you want me to ask a question, I will, but I don't want it to ignite a firestorm.
Okay.
Your choice, Mr. Co-Chair.
No fires. Easy softball questions.
Mr. Bennett, if I may. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I would just actually comment on your medical liability comment. I agree with you. It is about patients. And as a family physician, and in my other life, I'm president of the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians and have been spending a lot of time on this for the past 10 years. What it's also about is access. And right now, the cost of medical liability insurance for physicians is driving them out of business, which means that Oregonians in underserved parts of the state, and the reality is rural Oregon is aging. So that means a lot of your members are having more and more trouble gaining access to services because fewer and fewer of my docs are able to stay in business. So the cost drives a lot of other things. And you're right, cost should not be the only part of the discussion, and I agree with you completely. It has to focus on the patients. But cost can be a surrogate for decreased access to good care. And I don't mean to preach at you, but I want to be clear about the ramifications that aren't just about pocketbooks, but are really about patient safety and patient access to care.
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, from the
Please.
I served on the medical liability task force that the health policy board created. This was in 2010. And there were representatives for trial lawyers and defense attorneys. There were a number of doctors on that task force, as well as representatives for consumers. And I very much appreciate the fact that the physicians on that task force were very understanding and very supportive of the concerns I've just mentioned. It was not just about cost for them either.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you. I didn't mean to sound preachy, but just want to be clear.
Very good. Thank you. Co-Chair Bates.
Yeah, just to say we're talking about the elephant in the room, probably. I hate to do it, but at our present position right now, this is like being the last week and a half, 2 weeks in a regular session. We're here at night passing through significant legislation. Commonly we do that after a long process of 5 or 6 months, but this bill, frankly, has been through that process last session and in the interim, so I don't feel bad about that, except that it's late at night and we're keeping people from their families and loved ones. That said, since we're here anyway, as far as medical mal is concerned, I'd like to have your opinion on trying to run something through this legislative assembly right now that has not been fully vetted, had a full and complete discussion. As a physician right now, of the 7 or 8 or 9 options available to us right and that we could possibly pass through, I don't know which one to pick. I don't know which one really works. And I am committed to putting together a task force that after 10 years, starting with Senator Charlie Ringo and myself and others, that reads this down and says in the next session, 2013, we bring to the floor for a vote a significant change in how we handle medical malpractice, with the primary thing being that we want to make sure the patients are safe and that we decrease the amount of defensive medicine that occurs. You have a comment back on that?
I would just say that if you look at the report that was done for the Health Policy Board this year and the different options that were considered and so forth, my reading of that and is that a number of the options there, frankly, make minimal change in cost factors, although when we're talking about big dollars, 1%, it can be a significant savings and so forth. The one option that I think actually was called transformative was perhaps some type of administrative claim system and so forth. And indeed, if you look at the recommendations that came from the Medical Liability Task Force that I served on, that was also some type of administrative type system was also included in that as well. But there are also many complex issues to setting that up and getting it approved as well.
Hello? Please.
Do you think we're ready to pass something through this legislative assembly in the next 24 hours that answers those questions?
I don't think so, no.
Thank you.
And for the sake of the members that are up here and the audience, my guess is there will be further debate on this on the Senate floor in just a few days. So stay tuned.
I suggested perhaps as well.
Yeah. I think there very may well be.
It will be lively.
All right. So I'm going to call up Barbara Granito. Cardino? Am I close? Cardino. Great. Thank you for coming today.
Well, thank you. Okay, well, I've never done this before, so bear with me.
Start out with identifying yourself for the record.
Okay. Co-chair Bates and Freeman and vice chair Thatcher and Hoyle. I am Barbara Gardino, a member of volunteer Oregon Citizen Lobby. And I have here a letter from a friend of mine who was not able to come here tonight, and so she sent me in her place, Dr. Mary Ayala. Maybe some of you old-timers remember Mary when she was an economist at the Legislative Revenue Office here. And she went on to be a senior economist in the state of Washington, and she has some comments about these two identical bills. So what she says is, recently I analyzed House Bill 4153 and Senate Bill 1580. Both measures propose that Oregon legislature shall adopt the Oregon Health Authority's proposed coordinated care organization plan that fulfills the conditions set forth in Section 13 of Chapter 602, Oregon Laws of 2011. My analysis considered whether these conditions were satisfied based on criteria that a reasonable person might use. For example, Section 13, subsection 7, states that OHA shall prepare financial models on or before February 1st, 2012. It should demonstrate to the legislature the feasibility of a coordinated care organization being able to realize health care cost savings. I am a former chief and senior economist of two different state agencies and a former LRO economist. I also teach applied statistics at a local university. Therefore, I am comfortable suggesting that neither the report that I read, which was supposed to fulfill the requirements of subsection 7, nor the testimony that I heard during recent legislative public hearings, constitutes a financial model that demonstrated the feasibility of cost savings associated with OHA's proposed plan. For example, based on some of the opinions that were expressed during the public hearing on February 3rd, the cost of implementing Senate Bill 1580 was a legitimate concern. My comments may explain why these concerns are justified. On December 13th, 2011, in an update by consultants to the Oregon Health Policy Board. The board was informed that Drs. Baker and Wright were in the process of preparing a thorough analysis of Oregon's medical claims based on both state and national statistics. This report was never provided. Instead, the January 16, 2012 Health Management Associates prepared a report that projected cost savings based in part on Medicaid insurance claims for Portland, Oregon. No references were provided to explain how the costs from this sample were used to create a representative sample for all of Oregon. Instead, this report explained or suggested that cost savings would be realized from implementing OHA's plan by citing a number of successful pilot programs that have been implemented in other states. Such a conclusion is unfounded and biased because the National Medicare and Medicaid Center reported several unsuccessful pilot programs recently, and the CBO reported recently that a substantial overhaul of the Medicare program would be needed to realize cost savings. In summary, HB 4153 and Senate Bill 1580 reflect important public issues that will impact the quality and cost of Oregon's health care delivery system. Therefore, in my opinion, the fulfillment of Section 13.7 of Oregon laws of 2011 should rely on the use of sound financial and or sampling techniques in order to demonstrate to a reasonable person that OHA's plan will have a high probability of producing cost savings for all insured Oregonians. And it's said Dr. Mary Ayala, Ph.D.
Great. Thank you, and thank you for bringing this letter forward for her. She chose a nice person to bring it forward and discuss it with us.
Oh, thank you.
Did you have any other opinions or any discussion of your own that you'd like to give so the members could ask you about some of the stuff that you might have?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm good.
All right, wonderful. Great. Probably not likely you'd want to take questions on her letter, though, right?
No. I can provide you with her email address if you would like.
That would be very helpful. Well, thank you very much for coming today. You did a great job.
Okay, thank you.
So I have next signed up on the list. And again, if there's others that would like to sign up on the list, go ahead and let's get it done. So we got Dr. Mike Shercliffe, please.
I'm just going to wait for the minutes.
Okay, we're going to scratch him right on off then.
Hey, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I thought some good points were brought up. Is there anybody to kind of address some of the things that were brought up in that letter? Or I know she can't answer the questions from that, but I'm just wondering if there's somebody, since we're still waiting for amendments, maybe we could have some.
Well, my guess is the folks with the Oregon Health Authority and the executive branch are probably screwing around about trying to get everything completed.
Well, Mr. Chair, you've been intimately involved with this. What would be your take on what was said?
I have stated from early on that there is every bit of a possibility that there won't be a tremendous amount of savings in this coordination. I do believe there will be a much better coordination of care and a much better health achievement out of coordinating care. So I've less focused on the dollar and the amount of savings and more on an actual delivery system that provides for better health in our communities. And I think I said at one of the very first committee meetings, if we're only doing this to save money, we're doing it for the wrong reason. We have to be doing it to improve the quality of health care to the people on the Oregon Health Care Plan, and that is the only way into the future that there will be any sort of cost savings. So I'm not going to debate the numbers. We have, it seems like, some dueling numbers here, and we've had a report. And then this lady, who I'm sorry I have not met and not analyzed these numbers, presents this. Even if the numbers are off, the fact that we're going to global budgets and we are going to control the cost by only giving out so much money, there will be a change in the amount of money we spend. My hope is through this process, the care delivery will go up also. Coach Ray?
Yeah. I'd agree with what you said. Certainly we'll get better results. There's a reason that we rank 30th or 40th in every category of healthcare outcomes in the world for a first world country. And there's a reason we spend twice as much per population as anybody else in the world spends. And we're trying to address those issues. And it isn't because we got, as I've said before, bad doctors, bad hospitals, bad nurses. It's because we have a system that's siloed and doesn't work together. And I can cite you case after case in my practice and every other practice in the state how that occurs. We have to have a unified system. I believe the numbers that we've seen from the study based on what they expect to happen as far as savings are concerned are probably overstated for the first year or two and understated for the third, fourth, and fifth year. The potential savings out there from changing utilization is unbelievable. And when I think of hospitalizations, unnecessary x-rays, CT scans, MRIs are done every day by physicians and every day by hospitals because they're, for multiple reasons, trying to do the right thing. It's just amazing. And you have to be in somebody's office to see it going on before you can actually believe what's happening. And it's just a matter of money is flowing everywhere, nothing focused, nothing holistic for these patients. And we have to be clear about one thing, too. About 20% or less of the population burns up 80% of the dollars. And those 20% of people are not necessarily people you see every day in your life. These are people who have chronic diseases, who then have mental health issues or drug and alcohol issues. And they're the ones burning through the money, and that's the ones we're trying to approach and take care of in a way that's radically different, and that should bring costs down and give us a better outcome. And let's not think that everybody in the world is going to be affected by this bill. They're not going to be. We're going to be focused on people with mental health, drug and alcohol problems, and the Medicaid system, and the dual eligibles, which are very much the same population, and getting a better system for them that will drive down costs and get them better outcomes. That's what we don't do now. We just turn a blind eye to that, and we don't take care of them.
And just to be clear on the universe, I hope everybody knows the Oregon Health Care Plan is roughly 600,000 people, and this great group of dual eligibles we keep talking about is somewhere in the neighborhood of 60,000 is all. So we're really, our universe is fairly well defined on what we're dealing with here. Coach Eric Cowan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we have a little bit of time, there's an issue that's been running around in my mind for some time, and I've been thinking about it since yesterday evening, that I would like to get on the record, but I want to make it clear first and foremost, I'm not suggesting any additional change to statute.
Thank you.
I don't want to be hurt by the people sitting near me. But there is a thought that I would like to see some consideration of as we move forward. And that is, we're talking about health outcomes. We're talking about improved outcomes for individuals. And in the documents that we have in front of us, and I'm sure that they will be, the concept will be strengthened in the additional amendments around members, consumers' choice of providers, choice of options. The consumer choice issue is important to all of us as we move forward. What is not addressed is an ability to assure continuity of care at the same time, i.e., once there is a choice made, might we stay with that particular provider for a period of time? I think that the physicians on this panel would agree with me that in order to provide holistic approaches to an individual's health issues and deal with some of the behavioral change that's also necessary as part of the effort to produce better health outcomes, that continuity is important as you progress through. And those are difficult. They're challenging changes. I mean, I know what my provider tells me about what additional exercise I should get and what dietary changes I should make. And those are very difficult things to do. And I need to be reminded periodically. So I really do think that if we can find some way as we move this forward to take a look at the continuity of care issues in addition to consumer choice issues, that would be an important consideration.
Well, and thank you for that comment. Believe it or not, we spent the better part of the afternoon talking about that particular issue.
Well, you didn't tell me that, so I'm going to get it on the record.
It clearly is an issue, access, continuity of care, and choice. And those are hard things to legislate. But we do recognize the need for those things and have tried to, in some way, explain in the bill that we want that to happen. Now, since we are developing a system that's supposed to be flexible across the state. It's very hard to put it into statute, but I do believe we addressed that in some way. Of course, we'll wait and see how the amendments come out versus the discussion, but hopefully they'll be the same. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, Representative Thatcher, if you haven't had an opportunity, you might want to read the testimony, the written testimony submitted by my colleague Evan Salino from the Oregon Academy of Family Physicians. In it, he recounts the story of one of his patients who was a 57-year-old paraplegic on the Oregon dual-eligible on the OHP and Medicare, whose shower chair cracked, and he tried to get it replaced, $57, was denied, got a cut on his leg, which he couldn't feel because he was paraplegic, which got infected, which, to cut the story short, led to 8 surgical procedures, 2 years of recovery, and $2 million in costs for one of a $57 shower chair. Now, we find 50 of those patients across the state who've got $100 million in savings, and I can assure you, I've seen those patients. Dr. Bates has seen those patients. Any other physician will tell you about those patients. And it's bad care, as Representative Freeman said, and it's very expensive.
And it's not isolated.
No, it's not isolated at all.
So if nobody else, raise your hand if you want to talk. We're going to take a little recess, unless somebody else has some words of wisdom for us. I see the men in back not wanting to raise their hands, so I'll take it that you have no words of wisdom. With that, we will take a recess.
About 7:30 or so.
Yeah. Everybody, if I have your attention just for a minute. So we've had an opportunity to go through what was our first shot of amendments, and they're very, very close. LC now is going to take it through their process of spell checking and developing the product that we can hand out. They've asked for roughly 50 minutes, so hopefully it'll be a little quicker than that. I would like to say we're going to come back here in 1 hour. So at 8:15 we'll be back, and Mr. Bonetto will go through the bill, and again, the urgency of passing this bill tonight allows us to get it to Ways and Means on Friday and get it to the floors next week, which allows the budget to pass next Friday and allows us to get out of here on the 29th. So I apologize for the lateness of the night, but we are trying very hard to get this through, and we do want to make sure that the bill's gone through in a very public way. So we'll be back in an hour to do that. Thank you. Sir.
Mr. Chairman, what's the deal about tomorrow afternoon's meeting? Is it still likely to occur?
It is likely not to occur. It came back very good. The idea was we had tomorrow afternoon's meeting scheduled in case what we saw was not what we talked about. It came back what we talked about, and I feel very comfortable we'll move a bill tonight.
Good. To your relief to all.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. The good news is, if you don't wish to stay and go through the bill, that the bill will be public as it comes out at 9 o'clock. So we're available on the video tonight as we go through it, or it'll be available for everybody in the morning. But presiding officers are insistent on the fact that we get it done tonight. Stay tuned. We will be at recess until 9. This is all. Rise. Please rise. Thank you all for hanging in with us. I want to make just a couple sort of housekeeping announcements. One is, because of the late hour, that this bill will not be available electronically until tomorrow morning. It should be on the state website after 8 o'clock. So even though I said earlier it would be available, I was mistaken. And normally they're able to get them up quick, but it is getting fairly late this evening. The next thing I'd like to do is I'd like to thank the folks in Legislative Council, especially Lori Freeman, for hanging in with us this evening and completing this work for us. Again, we're on a very tight time schedule, and the fact that we have staff willing to do that is incredible. And finally, I'd like to thank our Legislative Fiscal nice person here that is also hung in with us and does amazing work for us. So that being said, I would like to invite Mike Bonetto up. Did he run back out? Oh, there he is. Mike Bonetto up to go through this rather quickly, concise and precise, but quickly. And then we'll do a few questions and see where we're at. With that, Mr. Bonetto. Oh.
Mike, have you ever heard of the person who reads the bills for the Senate?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mike Bonetto in the governor's office, and Senator Bates, yes, I have, and I cannot read that fast, but I will try to keep this as brief and succinct as possible. In front of you, you have the Dash 8 amendments, and I'm just going to walk through some high-level pieces so I think everybody has kind of a common foundation of where we're at. First things first, on page 1, if you go down to line 11, you'll see some language dealing with provider non-discrimination, and this language was put in there to clarify a provider appeals process of a CCO and an appeals process to the OHA. And so that is some new language that you will see really from line 11 on there. Page 3, line 4, section 11. This is some new language dealing with transparency. So if you read this, you'll see that OHA will be required to publicly report CCO costs for direct medical care and non-medical care, as well as OHA administrative costs each quarter to the legislature. So this was some clarifying language that would really call out some of those data sets and have OHA coming back to you to reporting. Page 3, line 22, section 13, some clarifying language on the Community Advisory Council. A few things I would just highlight. So we have some clarifying language on the meeting frequency, where it says no less than once every 3 months. Some clarifying language around the process of selecting the council. And then lastly, there was some clarification around the duties of the council to include overseeing of a community health assessment and then adopting a community health improvement plan. Page 4. At the bottom of page 4 on line 26, section 14, there is some new language dealing with what is being referred to as innovator agents. These are individuals who would be on site and really kind of linked to a CCO, CCO that would request them, and that they would serve really as that single point of contact between the CCO and the OHA. Page 5, line 19, section 16. This language here clarifies language around data sharing, ensures that CCOs, contracted providers, and public health entities can share information for the care of CCO members. So that's some new language that was included in there. Page 6, at the top, line 3, section 17, there is some new language dealing with the work group on patient safety and defense of medicine. This is under the direction of the governor to recommend legislation for the 2013 legislature. It deals with some membership and the scope of that work group. That takes us to page 9, middle of the page, line 11, some new language dealing with the global budget. And this is clarifying really the allocation of payment and a link to community needs assessment. Right below that, you'll see on line 18 some more new language, and this was kind of clarification of having OHA to work with communities to potentially leverage additional federal funding opportunities if CCOs contribute local funding streams to maximize federal matching opportunities. So some new language there. Page 10. On line 7, some new language dealing with, or clarifying language really, dealing with criteria. On line 8, you'll see that the coordinated care organizations demonstrated experience and capacity, so that's some clarifying language. And then you'll see through lines 10 on in terms of criteria around financial risk. So clarifying CCO experience and ability in the certification process to manage financial risk and operate within a global budget. Clarifying minimum reserve requirements as a minimum for CCOs. And again, this is based on existing contract requirements for managed care organizations. And then we also have some clarifying language around long-term care services. We have the word covered, making sure we're clarifying covered long-term care services. That then takes us to page 13. Starting on line 15, dealing with the governance. So some clarifying language on the makeup of the governing board. On clarifying the who constitutes a majority, those sharing in financial risk, and also calling out on lines 18, 18 and 19, healthcare providers, a physician, nurse practitioner in the primary care setting, and then also a mental health or chemical dependency treatment provider, and then two members from the community at large, and one member from the community advisory council. The bottom of page 13, on line 30, there's some language that continues on to page 14 in terms of clarifying more than one CCO could be certified in a geographic region, dealing with provider choice and patient choice and optimizing access. On page 14, Section 21, line 14, new language dealing with metrics. So establishes a metrics committee appointed by OHA to adopt outcome and quality metrics. And lastly, on page 16, there is some new language dealing with some antitrust provisions and really clarifying state supervision of CCOs. Mr. Chair, that is all I have.
That's fabulous. Thank you. I would like to take some questions from the committee. I know that...
Please. Thank you. Two quick clarifying questions, Mr. Bonetto. The first is that on... page numbers have changed. I apologize. One second. Page 6, line 1, where it says subsection 1 of this section does not apply to psychotherapy. Now, we reviewed that ORS, and I just want to confirm that it's the intention that this is only referring to actual session notes from psychotherapy and not to summaries of treatment, progress, full-scope communication otherwise between mental health providers and physical health providers, because obviously we're not going to be able to make progress
right
if we can't do that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, what I can clarify is really the intent that went in, that this is clarifying that this is addressing federal regulations. So that really was the intent. In terms of how far that goes, we can discuss that, but that was certainly the intent there.
Based on the RS, I was okay with it. I just, to be honest, Dr. Bates and I got a little tizzified when we first read it, until we read the ORS. The second thing is just, again, a quick clarification on page 10, line 20. lines 22 and 23. I just want to be confirmed that vision is considered part of physical health care. I get worried when I don't think my patients can read their prescription bottles. So is the intent of the OHA that those be included, that these, that's included, right, regular vision services?
Mr. Chair, Senator Steiner Hayward, yes. I think what we were trying to provide was a framework that, you know, OHA could use criteria to look at really the scope and the continuum of services in a broad spectrum, and we were not looking at excluding any particular service by any means, but just trying to demonstrate the scope of services.
Thank you very much. That's all, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Great. I know Co-Chair Bates may have a question or comment.
Just some clarifications probably to make sure we're literally on the same page. Page 6, Section 17, talks about the Patient Safety and Defensive Medicine Group. And I want to make it clear that we have assurances from the governor and leadership that this is not just kicking the can down the road again. In 2013, this group will bring forth the basis for legislation to be considered by the Legislative Assembly. Whether that is voted up or down the Assembly is not to be decided here, obviously. But this is the real thing. For the first time in many, many years, the states could look at medical malpractice issues in defensive medicine. We expect this group to do it in a very objective fashion and bring us something that we can take to the floor. And we expect that if that product meets with the governor's approval, he'll be a champion of this.
Right. Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, I feel confident in speaking for the governor after, you know, hearing from him on many occasions on this. I mean, he is committed to this. He's put it down on paper. He had his letter that went out last week. And I think within that letter, he really was saying, even, you know, with or without consensus, he will be moving forward with legislation for 2013. We're very hopeful that we can really set up a process where it's quite collaborative, but he is certainly quite committed to moving forward.
Further comment just quickly on this topic. I don't think anybody in this building wants tort reform more than I do, not only from the point of view of defensive medicine, the cost of defensive medicine, but as in my private life, I'm a physician, so I'm obviously very prejudiced about this. But I do not believe in a 3 or 4 week session is the time to do this, nor should any commission or this legislature have a gun held their head to get it done by a certain date. Fact is, we can't bind the next legislative assembly anyway. So as much as I want tort reform, it's not something we should attempt in a short session. It's too complex. It's too important to rush through. This bill has been 2-3 years in the making, and I can say it's been 20 years in the making. Tort reform needs to wait till the next session. Mr. Chair, can I move on?
Yeah, you got the floor. Go ahead.
On page 10, this language may look strange. Some people here, others will recognize it immediately. What we're trying to do here is to be certain that those organizations that have reserves in the state now, whether it be an MCO or a dental program or a hospital, have an ability to come forward with reserves if they wish to and form a CCO. We could have used other language, and the committee considered that very, very clearly. Some of that language would have required reserves that were so high that hardly anyone in the state could set up a CCO. So the language you see here was carefully chosen. I hope people will understand that. It's the program we've been working under for almost 20 years. It's worked. Nobody's gotten broke, and we think it's a program and a method we can use for setting reserves that will actually work for everybody. Page 13. This was also a very difficult issue for us to deal with. There's two pieces of this that we are concerned about. We're concerned about. One was calling out certain members to a committee or to the governance group. And we felt because of the need for a primary care home and the intense need for mental health and drug and alcohol treatment for these target populations, that we really had to go forward and do this. It does not mean that we don't value other members of the health work task force at all, or that we don't value other providers. We do. These are very two special groups that we think really need to be there, and that's why we called those out. The other line that's important is line 14, 15, and 16. You notice there's a subtle change here. We believe that change, and I'll see as less to believe that change, allows not-for-profit organizations to be on the boards, and we think that's an important issue. There was some question of whether or not the way it was written before did that. There's also a question of you couldn't be on the board unless you brought a lot of money to the board. We don't want that either. We want people there who have a risk one way or the other. Mr. Chair, I'm going to stop there. I have a couple other issues, but I think others can probably cover those pretty well. Now, that's the major issues that I'm concerned about.
So I actually have a question. On page 16 in the antitrust language, we talked about this, it seemed like quite a bit in the meetings, but I want to make sure that the idea of the antitrust language and having the health authority involvement doesn't mean that you can't have a process and where people can get together and have a meeting and talk about some of these issues without having the health authority there.
Mr. Chair, I think that's exactly right. I think the way that we have viewed this, if I'm looking at page 16, if I look even at lines 17 and 18, I think the key language there says shall engage in appropriate state supervision. So I think, you know, we have viewed that. That does not necessarily mean that you're at every meeting and every oversight. It's really understanding what is going on in that community and providing that necessary oversight.
So simpler way to say that, and I want to make sure I get this right in my mind. The health authority sets up a process or an accepted procedure for people to get together and talk, that will be fine, and we won't require somebody from the health authority to go to every single one of these meetings.
Mr. Chair, as far as I understand, that's absolutely correct.
Great, thank you. All right.
Are you ready for
your
motions?
Yeah, we're going to close the public hearing.
No, session.
And we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1580. And we will not have the fiscal tonight. We will have it prior to the full Ways and Means Committee on Friday. And checking with our wonderful legislative fiscal staff, they say that is 100% okay. So with that, I would recognize Co-Chair Bates.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 8 amendments and move Senate Bill 1580 as amended to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
So, Co-Chair Senator Dr. Bates has made a motion to adopt the Dash 8 amendments and move to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Do I have discussion? Senator Bates.
I want to make it clear, if I could, that we did not try to pick winners and losers in this document. We really tried to lay out a plan that would allow the Oregon Health Authority to have enough room to write law and write rules will make this work, and to be nimble and be quick to do that over the next 12 months while we're gone, but yet give them some sideboards and some guidance and make them know very clearly what legislative intent was. Well, I hope we've done that. If we haven't, I apologize. I don't want anyone in the audience here to feel that we have picked winners or we have picked losers. It wasn't that way. We're trying to bring a system together that's very different. We're trying to make a real breakthrough in healthcare in this state. And for all the reasons we know about, the looming loss of federal funds, the opportunity to gain more federal funds, the opportunity to give better outcomes for this population. So I hope you'll take this document home, look at it, digest it, and while there's things everyone won't like, I hope there's enough that everyone will like that we can make this work. We'll be seeing this again in full Ways and Means, where there'll be another discussion, I'm sure, and then we'll have some fun on the floor with it on both sides of the Legislative Assembly.
Thank you. Other comments, discussion? I would like to take just a moment and thank the stakeholders that have worked with us on this. You guys have heard me say this many times. I'm not an expert in this. You all are. I hope this bill reflects many of the hours of work that you all have been involved in. The Oregon Health Authority developed a very open public process for us to work through. I want to thank them for their work. I did thank Legislative Council when you're out of the room. I want to thank you again for staying late tonight and helping us get this right. It's been a very interesting journey, and we've got to a point now where we're able to move a bill. With that, I would like to have a roll call vote, please.
Senator Steiner Hayward?
Aye.
Co-Chair Bates?
Aye.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Hoyle?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Co-Chair Freeman?
Aye. With that, the bill passes. and we will need a carrier. May I suggest Dr. Bates?
I will accept that assignment, sir.
Thank you. And then do we need for all the others?
We do.
Okay, so we'll need a carrier. So you're going to carry House Senate floor, too?
I'll get the Senate floor, yeah.
Okay, and can Representative Kochek and I co-carry it on the House floor, please?
Yeah. We'll have co-carriers in the Senate.
With no other business from the committee, I will close the committee. Thank you for your patience tonight.